Welcome, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. Today is March 25th, 2017, and my gosh, do we have a lot going on today. A lot going on in the studio. A lot happened at the shop last night. A lot's happening in the final day of March and the upcoming month of April. So we're going to be talking all about it on this program. We got about just under 2 hours to go. And let me start with this. Last night, we had an awesome time at the law enforcement, the second annual law enforcement benefit shoot-off at the Aaron's Gun Shop range there. We had four teams, Cameron PD, Milam County SO, and Rockdale PD, and Aaron's team were competing to see who is going to be able to win the pot and the trophy to give to the law enforcement agency of choice. Well, I am happy and proud to say that Team Aaron won, but it was tough. We had a rough time. Everybody had a rough time, which brings me to this point. If you don't train and you're carrying a weapon, you're in trouble. If you train but you only shoot at a piece of paper, that the worst thing that can happen to you is get a paper cut, you're in trouble. Because let me tell you something. I know what I'm doing. And last night, I screwed up. I did not do very well, but we still were able to do enough to pass. But I want to thank all the teams and all the people who supported the law enforcement benefit shoot-off. And next year is going to be even bigger, so start training now. I still think that Bell County is just to participate. So that's a smack talk, Bell County. Come on, get your teams together next year. Let's see you can win here. So law enforcement benefit shoot-off was great. I also have today something special going on here today. I have a very good friend, Susan Connolly. She is in studio. She's a fantastic artist. She's a great shooter. And she's was on one of the teams last night defending or trying to win for Rockdale PD. Sorry, Susan, but you did a great job. Susan, if you could, just come on over here for a second. I want to ask you just a couple questions. She's going to be doing a portrait of me in studio. So, Susan, on this mic, be careful. It's sensitive. Susan, how you doing? Welcome to the studio.
I'm good. How are you guys?
Just get a little closer to the mic there for me.
I'm really glad to be here with such handsome... No,
oh my God, that is on the record. Mark the tape, Trey. Mark the tape. We're going to broadcast that. All right, Susan, I got you in here. Why don't you tell everybody what you're going to be doing for us today here?
Today I'm painting an oil on canvas, and I'm doing a portrait of Matt Beatros, and I'm standing back behind the producer, and we're going to be painting. It'll probably take about 2 hours.
So you're going to get the thing completed before the end of the show, and we're going to show it. I'll get it
on
video.
Right.
Now, here's the other thing, ladies and gentlemen. Go to aaronsgunshop.com. Go to the Facebook page. We've got posted up there Susan's picture, and we got a picture of the one of the models that she was painting, and you'll see the picture that she painted right below it, give you an idea of her work. So if you've had any desire or dream about becoming an artist, this woman right here can teach you how to do it. Check it out, and we'll be talking to you about 11:30, Susan, to get more detail.
All right. Thank you.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, we got a lot going on, so let me give you today's show highlights. And today, as always, I'm going to read to you three stories of real-life people defending themselves from a sudden attack. From these stories, we can learn what to do and what not to do if these situations happen to us. My license to carry segment will go over force levels. Force, reasonable and necessary force, and deadly force. When defending yourself with these, they're extremely important to know and extremely important when applying them to action. So get your note-taking materials ready. In the attorney-lawyer segment, I again will be speaking with attorney Benton Ross Watson right here from Cameron and get his expert take on what force, reasonable force, and necessary force and deadly force really means and what can happen if we don't apply these in the proper manner or in the proper time. This is always a great segment. We're getting a lot of feedback on this segment. A lot of people like it. If time permits, I may talk about politics and the economy and how we must have a basic working knowledge of both so we can make the right choices at the right times. Today's topic of interest segment will go over all the upcoming events in March and now into April. Lots of great things happening at Aaron's, so you're going to check it out on the website at aaronsgunshop.com. When you go there, please like us on Facebook. Show us your support. And that'll be great. We'll love to hear from you. This week's product spotlight comes from our sponsor, ANC Firearms. It's going to be the Ruger Mini 14 tactical version. Now, I love this rifle and have had one since 1988 in both .223 and 7.62x39. I kind of go for the 7.62x39 one myself. I'll tell you all about it later when we come to that segment. But you can call ANC Firearms right now at 254-983-4000. 4417, 254-983-4417 to put yours on hold till the show is over. You can't go anywhere until the show is over, but you can give them a call and tell them to hold on to it for you. Now, every week around 11 here in the studio, we have the voice of law enforcement, Officer Randy Dixon, the walking encyclopedia of great information and good old common sense. So be sure to listen. The voice, starting at around 11 o'clock today. My gun training demo will go over the reasons as to why a small auto pistol has more tendency to jam than a larger pistol. Most of it has to do with your grip. Understanding the mechanics of your handgun and understanding how important the proper grip is will make clear how vulnerable your small auto is to malfunction if you are not trained to use it. And finally, I'll be interviewing Susan Connolly. We had her on just a second ago. Artist extraordinaire, who right now is painting a portrait of me in the studio as I do the show. Her work, like I said, is impressive, and she gives classes. We'll be going over all that at about 11:30 today. Okay, so now, strap yourselves in, turn up the volume, call someone and tell them to tune in, and let's start the program. And I always start not only the program, but my day with a great cup of Joe, and I get my Joe from Hilltop Cefco right here in Cameron. Now, ladies and gentlemen, if you're in the area, Hilltop Cefco's got a whole bunch of stuff in there. And the ladies and the guys who work there, they're doing a great job. Go in there, get your pack of smokes, bag of chips, newspaper, a cup of coffee, whatever it is, go to the Hilltop there in Cameron, because you know when you're on the go, make a Cefco. How much cornier can I get than that, right? Okay, if you want to be part of the show, the number to get us here in the studio is 254-697-6633. Toll free, it's 866-504-1051. You can email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com, or just go directly to the face of the website at aaronsgunshop.com. Okay, moving on, because we always seem to get a loss of time here because everything gets so exciting, we just lose track of time. So I'm going to go right into our NRA segment, I guess you could call it, since I'm reading out of the NRA magazine this time. That's what it's going to be. But in this section, I'm going to read to you three stories from the NRA's Armed Citizens page of the American Rifleman. And hopefully, from these true stories, we can learn what to do and what not to do, and maybe even get a laugh or two in the process. It all depends on the story. So this is coming from January 2017. The American Rifleman's Armed Citizen column. Number one. For those who think that a restraining order can protect a person, remember this. A restraining order is just a piece of paper, and sometimes people don't abide by it. In fact, some people react with violence to the very idea of one. That's one takeaway from a defensive shooting that involved parties from two states. A woman called the police to report a stalker was outside the Los Altos Hills, California home where she was staying. She was on the phone with 911 dispatchers when the suspect forced his way into the home and started shooting at her and others inside the residence. Fortunately, a male resident of the home had grabbed a gun before the intruder entered the house. He shot the bad guy several times. The alleged stalker fled but was later hospitalized and charged with attempted murder. He was then identified as someone the woman had known in Georgia. She had asked for a restraining order against him, though it was unclear if one was issued. Now, my commentary to that, ladies and gentlemen. This is absolutely correct. A restraining order is nothing but a piece of paper. If you live under the false reality that you can always avoid harm or danger by a restraining order or just by calling 911, I got news for you. Sometimes, you gotta take care of it yourself. And sometimes that can be messy. Face the facts. Face the reality and prepare yourselves. Story number two. Home invaders. If you're asked to leave, save yourself a heap of trouble and just do it. Or you might end up dead. That's what happened to an intruder in Wyoming recently. A stranger entered a Sheridan, Wyoming home in the overnight hours one day. The adult male resident told the intruder to turn around and leave. The miscreant refused. The resident then armed himself with a shotgun and again asked the stranger to leave. When the interloper again refused, the armed citizen fired, fatally hitting the trespasser in the chest. My commentary. Ladies and gentlemen, I have said for years, and specifically on this show, that words mean things. Our special guest attorney just last week on my show said words mean things. That's you, Ross. This home invader obviously didn't take my class or listen to my show, and because of that, he is now dead. Remember, not everyone is schooled on what words mean. One day, you may have to teach them. Be prepared. Story number three. When a suspect pulled out a note demanding money, the store manager pulled out a gun. The manager of the Belmont Market held the alleged robber at gunpoint until the police arrived and arrested the man. He told news reporters afterward that he was glad he didn't have to shoot. The people who come here are excellent, so we don't want to see anything happening in our neighborhood, the manager said. My commentary. Ladies and gentlemen, this kind of sounds like rock, paper, scissors to me. The robber pulls out a note. Store owner pulls out a gun. Guess what? Robber loses. Remember, be prepared. Have a gun and know how to use it. Right, Susan? That's right. And a piece of paper ain't worth the thing it's written on. Okay, so that's the NRA. 254-697-6633 if you want to become part of the program. Get your note-taking materials ready. I'm going into License to Carry and CHL. Once again, License to Carry and CHL is the same thing. There's nothing different between the two three-letter identifiers. Old school is CHL. New license now is License to Carry. So, one of the most important things to know when defending yourself with force is to know what the different levels of force are and what they mean and how to apply them. A quick example of this would be if there was a fly on the wall in your kitchen. Do you use a fly swatter or a 12-gauge to kill it? Obvious answer would be fly swatter, for a 12-gauge would have been excessive and unnecessary force. Well, the same applies when the need arises to defend yourself, family, or property. If an unauthorized person is standing in your front yard, do you tell them to leave or use a 12-gauge? Well, obviously, you would tell him to leave and then take it from there as compared to just blowing him away at first sight. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I say this a lot. The law does not care that you have rights at the moment. The law will take you in, and put you in the system, make you spend lots of money to prove you have rights. So before you blow someone away with a 12-gauge when a verbal command would have been all you needed, make sure you understand the levels of force and what they mean and how and when they should be applied. Now let me read to you now those definitions so we can be ready to further understand what they mean when my guest, attorney Benton Ross Watson, breaks down the force levels and gives us his expert opinion on how they should be applied. Those force levels are force, reasonable and necessary force, and deadly force. We get this directly out of our workbook. I'm going to basically read the whole page, and then I'm going to go over specifically the definitions of force. First is a very important question, and that is, are you capable of using force or deadly force for self-protection? Because here's a fact. Regardless of who you are, what you know, or how good you are, if you're not mentally prepared, chances of winning are decreased. Trying to make a decision when faced with reality can be fatal for you. It's better to have a plan and not need it than to need a plan and not have it. There is no single solution. No single solution is correct for all situations. The presence of the gun may actually create more problems than it's intended to solve. The objective of force, deadly force, is to stop the other. And I use words like control and neutralize. The other, so as to eliminate the apprehension of fear for one's life. Deadly force is to be used as a means of last resort when all other means have failed and the fear for the loss of your life is immediate. Now, this is important. Shooting to kill indicates premeditated intent to inflict death or serious bodily injury on another regardless of their intent and or actions being unlawful. Shooting to stop, keyword, is the intent to reduce or eliminate the fear you have of death or serious bodily injury to yourself based on the other person's unlawful use of deadly force against you. Shooting to stop, while it may result in the other person's death, lacks the intent to kill. Shooting to kill is never an option for a law-abiding person. Now, I'm going to get into my definitions real quick, but later on, in the beginning of next week, I'll be having the video up, probably Monday or Tuesday, so I want you to see this. I'm going to put it up to the screen. I'm showing you what looks to be like a fuel gauge, and it's divided into three sections. The section on the left is marked with F. The F stands for force, Then it goes up a little bit way on the gauge. Your first line comes in, your separation line. And then the next level is reasonable and necessary force. Then it keeps going around to the other side of the gauge and comes to the next section, which is deadly force. So when you see this on the video, you see what I'm talking about. Why, if we could use force, do we automatically go to deadly force? There is a range of things we can do. So we can only do that if we understand what those forces mean. Now I'm going to read to you the definitions of force, reasonable and necessary force, and deadly force. Legal definition of force. Resistance that in its actions alone will not cause death or serious bodily harm. Again, legal definition of force. Resistance that in its actions alone will not cause death or serious bodily harm. And in our next segment after the break, when I get Attorney Benton Ross Watson on, I'm going to try to go back and forth with him as to what could be some examples that fit in the parameters of the definition of force. The next one on the scale would be reasonable and necessary force. The legal definition for reasonable and necessary force. The minimum amount of lawful aggression. Sufficient for self-protection or protection of a third person. Again, legal definition for reasonable and necessary force. The minimum amount of lawful aggression, sufficient for self-protection or protection of a third person. That would be the center part of our fuel gauge. Now, let's go over to the right side of the fuel gauge. That's the legal definition for deadly force. Force that is intended or known by the actor to cause, or in the manner of its use or intended use, is capable of causing death or serious bodily injury. I say again, legal definition of force. Force that is intended or known by the actor to cause, or in the manner of its use or intended use, is capable of causing death or serious bodily injury. Now, I'm going to pretty much stop there. Trey, we're going to take a 3-minute break in just a second. We just went over the definitions of force. We read a whole bunch on attitude and preparedness. And when we come back after the break, my special guest, Attorney Benton Ross Watson, will be here to help us break it all down. A lot of people are liking this because the instruction to get your license is so brief. It used to be like a 15-hour class. Now it's a 5-hour class, 5.5-hour class, and you got to cram all this stuff in there. I got to put as much stuff in your brains as possible. And there's always these questions. And I cannot give legal advice. I'm not an attorney. So we are blessed here to have our special guest to go over these things. So when we come back after the break, we will have special guest, Attorney Benton Ross Watson, with us to go over the details. See you in about 3 minutes.
Capellino Dodd Krebs Law Firm focuses on cases involving asbestos exposure, mesothelioma, birth trauma, defective products, and injury and death resulting from car and truck wrecks. Call the tough, experienced injury attorneys at Capellino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron. Call 888-MESO-FIRM or 254-697-4965.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who's been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Bitros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. aaronsgunshop.com.
Arch Coons, the owner of ANC Firearms in Heidenhammer, Texas, is an avid gun enthusiast and enjoys helping all of his customers find a gun that's perfect for them. With large pistols, rifles, and shotguns, finding the right gun becomes easy. Go to ANC Firearms, located at 5819 U.S. Highway 190 in Heidenhammer, or call them 254-983-4417. Pistols, rifles, shotguns, ammo, knives, and a whole lot more. ANC Firearms, 254-983-4417.
Hey Siri, I just got engaged. That is very exciting, Cassie. What would you like for me to do next?
Oh, gosh, there's so much. I've got to find a dress, flowers, cake, food, a photographer, a venue, bridesmaids I have to call, and...
Here is what I have found. Everything you are looking for is in one place. The Hilton Garden Inn Temple is presenting their 13th annual bridal show on Sunday, March 26th from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. You'll meet with wedding vendors from photography, bakeries, salons, venues, florists, and lots of others who are ready to help you plan your special day.
Siri, you are the best.
Actually, there's more. Every vendor will be giving away a door prize valued at $50, and the Hilton Garden Inn will be giving away a grand prize of a newlywed date night package for a year.
Sunday, March 26th at the Hilton Garden Inn in Temple from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. For more information, call 254-899-3908.
If you're planning a party for a wedding, birthday, anniversary, corporate event, or just to have fun, and you plan to serve alcohol, you need a bartender. Aaron's High Cap Nightcaps Bartending Service is who you need to call. Aaron's High Cap Nightcaps provides a complete portable bartending service. When you provide adult beverages to your guests, you want them served fast, correctly, and with flair. Aaron's High Cap Nightcaps can do that for you. TABC certified, professional, and with a complete bar setup, Aaron's can help make your social event one to remember for a long time. Call Aaron's now at 254-482-0557 or email Aaron's at mail@aaronsnightcaps.com. Make Aaron's High Cap Nightcaps your first call and last call when you want a professional bartender for your next social or corporate event. Call 254-482-0557 or go to aaronsnightcaps.com.
And that's powerful stuff.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. Again, today is March 25th, 2017, and we got lots going on. If you want to be part of the show, 254-697-6633. If you want to send me an email, aaronsgunshop@gmail.com, or just go directly to the website, aaronsgunshop.com. And please, if you like this show, show your support. Go to the sponsors, go to my Facebook page, like me on Facebook, give us a call, give us positive feedback, tell us what you'd like to hear, so on and so forth. I'd love to hear your support. Now, we are back on this segment, our attorney-lawyer segment, and we're very blessed here to have our special guest, attorney Benton Ross Watson. Ross, welcome to the program again.
It's good to be here again.
I can't tell you how many comments I got from last week's show. I mean, everybody enjoyed listening to the show. They're like, wow, that's great back and forth there, a lot of clarity and all that. So we got something going here, man.
I don't know if it was very clear, but that's my business.
So. Law, it's never clear. That's exactly. Why we hire you guys to do the job. I'll tell you what, Ross, why don't you tell everybody, first of all, how they can get a hold of you so they can get your expertise and help them in any situation that they may have going on.
105 East Main here in Cameron. My office number is 254-605-4140. Call it number. I practice general practice here, do everything except for maybe patents and highfalutin tax law, so I need help with that stuff myself. So.
Okay. Hey, I noticed you're drinking a fresh cup of Joe there from Sefco Hilltop. Yeah. You see that? Not only does this show drink its coffee, but we got our special guest drinking coffee too, so go get your coffee from Hilltop, Sefco. Woo! All right, now, Ross, I read to you the use of force and deadly force that we teach in the license to carry class. I'm a certified instructor of the state of Texas. I've been that way for years, taught thousands of students, okay? But I know, you know, if you pull the trigger and you're in the court of law, they got the prosecutor who loves to win, doesn't right. like to lose. So he's going to take all this and try and spin it. So I sent you some questions. I'm going to read them here. You're going to give me your take on it. Tell me if I'm missing something. Give me your input, the whole works. And everybody, you need to either get your recording devices out or your pens and paper because there's going to be a lot of good info coming. So here we go. Ross, I'm just going to start off with a question because when we get talking, it goes longer than we're supposed to, and it's all good. But I'm going to start now so we don't waste any time. First question I want to ask to you, please define more thoroughly the definitions of force, reasonable and necessary force, and deadly force. And if you could, help me out using this gas gauge example of examples that could apply to each one of those types of forces. But I think you may have questions about this definition.
Okay, so this is why you had sent me some of these questions earlier in the week, and I was explaining that a lot of the things that probably we're going to talk about, there's not a really good way. They don't really have a place in the legal world from a legal context, but they do have good application value as far as teaching somebody, you know, what, how to a weapon. So I don't want to make it seem like the things you have said are wrong in any kind of way. But legally speaking, right, there's just going to be two, maybe three kinds of force. That's going to be force and deadly force, right? Even the threat to use deadly force is going to be force, okay? And so maybe you can put threats sort of in their own category, but that's going to be force, okay? And it's not considered, in the gas station example, where he handed him a note and he pulled out a gun, right? That wouldn't be deadly force because he didn't actually use the weapon.
That would be threat. Penal Code 904, threat is justifiable force.
Yes, and because it was only force, right, that he would use deadly force if it were necessary.
Necessary, right.
Okay, and so the definitions of any kind of force, it doesn't matter whether it's deadly or non-deadly, is going to be, right, someone's reasonable belief whether that force or deadly force, right, was immediately necessary to protect the person against another, right, who is doing something unlawful. Okay? The only added requirement to that when you have deadly force involved is the same, except you have, was it unlawful, and was the person going to use deadly force against you? So, in other words, if you're coming to hit me or fight me, I believe that I need to use force, right, to prevent you from doing that, and it's immediate, and it is if you're coming to fight me, right, then I'm allowed to, if I reasonably believe I need to use that force, that physical force, to prevent you from using force against me. So the same would apply if you're using a handgun on me, right, I would be able to use a handgun on you, because that would be unlawful force from your standpoint, as long as I wasn't doing something to provoke you to use a handgun.
Well, sure, it'd have to be an illegal.
So, and I would more use this chart here that you have force, or and with a I don't, for people who don't see the screen, with sort of a half circle going over to deadly force, and this area in the middle where there's reasonable and necessary force. There's really no definition of reasonable and necessary.
Well, let me give you a clarification as to why I do that. We're taking it out of the student handbook. And here's an example, and tell me if I'm wrong with this. If I'm going to use my little gas gauge here and give an example of force, I would say, what's the most minimal thing I can do besides running away? Running away is a negative force. But if I do, like, say, hey, don't do that, stop, that was a verbal command, that's a force. Wouldn't you kind of put that down? Would you agree with me? Disagree with me if I'm wrong. Would you agree that a verbal command would be almost like the very beginning of the force level? And then it can go up from there until it gets to more like in the reasonable necessary force that I describe, where I restrain you or punch you. And then it continues on to where I'm pulling a knife, an axe, a gun, whatever it is to stop you.
I think definitely that probably so. You know, when we're getting stopped by a police officer, we know when they say stop. I mean, there's some level of force because they have authority to tell you to do so. I mean, I would say that would be the beginning point, to tell somebody to do something, a command.
Okay, so the gauge here, there's a major dividing line, and that is from when somebody is being used deadly force upon and then not. If somebody's having, if I'm applying deadly force to somebody or I'm not, if I'm not, it's some range of some type of force to almost the extreme point of using deadly force. And I would assume that reasonable people in a courtroom would say, well, he was justified for punching him in the nose, as compared to just saying stop. And that's why I'm using the progressive.
If somebody's coming to do something unlawful to you or your property, right, you have a right to use force. I mean, I would say if you reason believe that it's immediately necessary to prevent that person from doing the unlawful, right, part of it, to protect that person or that person's property. Unlawful doesn't necessarily have to be criminally unlawful. It can be even tortious, meaning civilly. It can be a civil wrong that somebody is doing to you. But there is that necessity. What was it? Was that belief. We're looking, what was the person's belief at the time? I really want to go to the next, to if I think I see your question. I mean, I want to go into the next thing, which is the objective. What is the objective?
Well, let me read the questions, everybody's okay. On the same sheet of music. This is a very intense conversation or topic, everybody, because what you think may be right may be totally twisted around in a courtroom. Okay, you have to be very careful here. That's why we're getting into it. Question number two, let's talk about the objective. What's the objective of force? Reasonable and necessary force, as we say, or deadly force? Go ahead.
Okay, and so this is another area that was, I was really got excited about when you asked me earlier in the week, as soon as I saw it, because it really is not going to matter what your objective is a lot of times when you're talking about deadly force. I'll start with force, but I want to at least say that right off the beginning, because you need to have a reasonable belief. What we're going to be looking at in a court is I'm going to be trying to convince the jury that my client, right, had a reasonable belief, right, that he needed to use that force, and that force needed to be used immediately to protect himself or herself. Okay, and so that I gave you a good example. One of my first jury trials that I had was a lady. It was a combat situation, and a lady used a common kitchen knife, okay, to basically in combat with her boyfriend, right? And it was just a small cut, right, on his hand, right? And we were saying that that wasn't deadly force. Now, there were other things in the case, but the jury found that basically it was deadly force. But we were arguing, it was a reasonable belief from her standpoint to use that knife, okay, regardless of whether it was force or deadly force. But she needed to use that to protect against him who was fighting against her, right? He didn't have any kind of weapon, right? But he was a bigger guy.
Yeah, but isn't it based on the person's perception? Let me give you an example of what I mean by that question. If I got two people being assaulted by, let's say, a cloned individual, a guy 6'7", huge muscle bound, and he's coming to physically do weird stuff to us, okay? And I'm standing here on one side facing one guy, and I've got a 5'2" petite young lady over here, and we both have Glock 17 pistols. They got 17 rounds, and both these guys are identical. They're coming at us. She shoots all 17 rounds, and I do too. With my knowledge, capability, and skills, wouldn't you say that was excessive for a guy like me if somebody reasonable was looking at, as compared to the young petite woman who was freaking out, scared to death, and using 17 rounds thinking she had to stop him? Isn't that kind of a depiction of one person's use of force as compared to another?
This is even hard for a professor to explain. There is subjective and objective, right, elements to that reasonable belief. But to not get into that, right, from your standpoint, do you think that you could have taken a guy that's 6'7", the scary looking, that's, you know, Stone Cold Steve Austin looking guy, right, that's coming after you?
In my condition, it's very limited due to the fact I got injuries and all that. So,
do you think that he would cause you serious bodily injury, right, which means something that could cause death, right, or permanent or protracted loss, right, of the use of some kind of limb or bodily member? Right. If so, if you think that you would be facing serious bodily injury, we're looking at your belief. Is that belief reasonable? If you felt like there was and you felt reasonably, right, that you needed to use deadly force, right, against that big guy to prevent him from causing you serious bodily injury, right, then I think, you know, you could be found not guilty.
I know, but then you gotta, yes, I understand. But wouldn't you agree that even though I may think my head's going under the bow of the boat, the jury of 12 got to understand it and believe that too. I've got to somehow relay that fear to them.
Exactly.
And that's where the problem comes in, right?
That's where the problem is.
So
exactly.
That's why we do this, ladies and gentlemen. We want to make sure that you understand both sides, what the law says and what you think it says or means, and then what does it mean to those who are going to judge your nanosecond decision?
Let me say one more thing about the objective too, as well as saying, I don't think it doesn't matter if you're going to shoot the person in the foot, right, or the hand. If you pull that gun out, right, and this is my opinion, I may argue it sometime in a trial later, right, because I see facts that are crazy all the time, but I honestly think that if you're going to use a gun and pull the trigger, that's going to be deadly force. And so you can't say what my objective is for that person. Is it to just stop him or kill him, right? Because right? It's going to be deadly force if you're using a gun. And I was saying in that same trial, right, we had the medical expert that got up there and testified that that small laceration on his hand, right, could have caused death, right, or, you know, protracted if he would not have gone eventually gone to the medical doctor and gotten treatment. Well, that's almost any injury. Almost any injury can get infected or bleed if you don't go get treatment. And so, but the jury still believed in that case.
Intent's a very important thing to convey, because my intent is not to kill anybody. My intent is to stop you from hurting me.
But the capability, what we're looking at in a trial is the capability of that weapon, right, is to cause force. And I think that the definition of deadly weapon, right, specifically says firearm. So I think that it gives emphasis that if you use a firearm, that's going to be considered deadly force, right? And I'm not saying that there's no argument ever to be made. There's no exception. There's exception to every rule, even this one. It's what my buddy used to say, my lawyer buddy. But I'm just saying, if you pull a weapon out, it's going to be deadly force, even if you were trying to aim for his knee or whatever. Because
just to be clear, Penal Code 904, threat is justifiable force. I could show or display a weapon. We're not talking about the same
thing. You could display the weapon.
But that's not deadly force. I want to make that clear.
But if we're shooting,
that's a different story. Okay. We're pulling the trigger. All right. My gosh, this can get so intense. I love it. Let's go to another question. Maybe it'll wrap back around to these other two. Can you please clearly give examples of what you think last resort means? Isn't it different with different people? And I think we just talked about this. The two big guys coming after us. But what would be... Well, give me an example of last resort. What, your head's going in the bow of the boat. The line has been crossed. What?
Again, this was another thing we said. There's no legal... I even researched this last resort issue. I was saying I represent police officers, law enforcement officers, and administrative proceedings. A few times I've done that. And it's, was there restraint, the hold that they use, like a chokehold or something? Was that, you know, reasonable and necessary? Did they use it? Yeah, you know, did they use, in other words, right, for instance, a juvenile that gets out of hand, was a juvenile corrections officer allowed to use this kind of restraint? They should have used this restraint as a last resort, right, because that could have been a deadly use of that restraint. But as far as speaking about firearms use, defending ourselves, I couldn't find one Texas case, not one law in the books that uses last resort. So as a last resort, right, yeah, it may be a good practice application for you, right? But if, again, I go back to, did you reasonably believe that the force you used was immediately necessary to quell, to you know, prevent that threat of harm that was coming at you, right? And that goes maybe to the whether it was excessive or not. What was the reasonableness of that force? But, right, again, that's based on the reasonable belief. So was it, this is, it's an easy definition, really, to remember the basic issue.
I want to give you an example, which is almost 100% factual. And I say it's not because everything that happened except the last part. But here's the question. My place gets robbed, my shop. And I'm coming down there at 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm in my pajamas and my flip-flops, and I'm carrying my M4 because I'm, like, protecting myself. There's nobody around. I'm out in the middle of nowhere, and I see people coming out with weapons in their hands. I'm not hesitating, okay? It didn't happen, but if it was to happen, you rob my store, you've got guns in your hands that you stole from me, I don't know if they're loaded or not, I'm not hesitating. How does that fit in this? How am I looked upon when in 3 o'clock in the morning and people rob me? I'm not gonna wait, no way. My opinion is it's now or never. So, I mean, this can go 20 million different directions, but in an example like that, are people going to still question you as to your intent or the method or your head under the bow of the boat?
You can, the code actually gives exceptions, and I will even cite the statutes for you folks. Texas Penal Code 9.31 and 9.32 are the self-defense and use of force statutes. Both of those, right, give exceptions, and they say that it is presumed. Your reasonable belief is presumed to be a reasonable belief, right? If somebody is breaking into your habitation, your place of employment, or your vehicle.
You hear that? That's an awesome clarification. We say it in the class all the time, but you're hearing it from the quote-unquote horse's mouth. Keep going.
Now, I want to make clear, it does say they're attempting to enter with force. And so I just read a case recently where an individual walked into a bar. And he walked in the bar after the bar was closed and was looking for a fight, actually, right, when he walked in there. But the door was unlocked. The door was unlocked when he walked in. And the court said it's not really, you know, what it's not really what he was looking to do. Even though he got into a fight and that's what he walked in there to do, it really wasn't based on what his intent. He did not use force to enter the bar.
Isn't that splitting hairs?
I mean,
that all that has to do with is a good attorney who spun the jury, right?
Maybe, but it was the appellate court deciding that that was the law in that case. And so when they're saying use of force to break in, I would say that they broke in the door or got through a locked door in some way. That would be the force. So if they entered by using force, I think your belief is going to be presumed reasonable. And I know we're almost fine, but I do want to say, like Florida, right, they have a, you know, stand your ground. It is a solid presumption. So if somebody breaks in, from what I understand the law in Florida, we've all heard that you're allowed to stand and fire on somebody, right? And that's going to be presumed reasonable.
Well, we got that here, Castle Doctrine.
It's not the same here. It is a presumption. Here it is only a legal presumption, meaning the state, right, could try to rebut that it's not reasonable. In other words, they could try to put on evidence that it still wasn't a reasonable belief, but you're not required to retreat in that situation. However, the state can say that your belief is not reasonable.
Here's a perfect example. It's 3:00 in the morning, guy breaks into your house, you shoot him, he dies, he's bleeding your carpet, law enforcement comes, and I always say, you're going to get questioned, aren't you? And the answer is yes. Do you think you have the possibility of staying home that night? Probably so, if you wanted to. As compared to, if you're on the street corner of 5th and Main, something happens, and you do the same exact scenario at 3:00 in the morning, and you got 12 witnesses, 12 different vantage points. Cops are going to come. They're going to question you. The odds say you're going to jail until they figure this thing out. Would that be a good assessment?
I would say that maybe if there's 12 witnesses, I don't, maybe not, but
well,
I would say there's a good
was,
chance, yeah, you're going to jail.
Based on what you're saying here in Texas, the law could say that we didn't believe that to be reasonable, even though you thought it was. Whereas in Florida, you're saying it's a given.
If you meet the requirements under the law for a reasonable belief there, I don't think that they can charge you here. As opposed, it's going to be, was it, was it a reasonable belief? And I think the state could try to put on evidence.
You know, Ross, we could have a 3-hour show just us. You know that?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm running out of time. Let me move on to the next question. We already touched on a little bit of it, but let me clarify the question. Verbiage. Shooting to kill versus shooting to stop, control, or neutralize. Please explain how the wrong words and wrong intent is very bad in this very politically correct world we now live in. I think we touched on a lot of that, but you got any other comments on that?
Yeah, I think there is some truth to that. There are some cases where the person intended to, like, really it was shown, there was evidence that really they wanted to kill the person, and really it had nothing to do was self-defense. But this goes back to what I was saying. Did you have a reasonable belief, right, that force was immediately necessary to prevent the other person's unlawfulness?
Would you agree that a person getting a license to carry, or anybody for that matter, should take a secondary class in acting? To learn how to cry on demand, show emotions, so that when you're in the courtroom... I'm telling you, because you're going to have to convince the jury of your nanosecond decision of fear of your life, and they're going to go, well, I don't know. Was the door unlocked or not? Was the key halfway turned or not? You know what I'm saying? Was the door locked damaged? It doesn't matter. The guy felt like I was going to die. See what I'm saying? I'm twisted.
I will say, Rick actually called me this morning. He wanted to tell me about two cases involving the police that don't knock when they enter to execute a search warrant. And there was two cases. One was a white gentleman that was growing marijuana in his house in Burleson County. The other one is the Marvin guy in Killeen. And it was in the Temple Daily Telegram. It was in the New York Times, right? In both situations, right, there was small kind of drug activity. The police didn't knock when they entered to execute the search warrant. And in both cases, both defendants got up, and their girlfriends were asleep with them in both cases. In both cases, they got up, right, and shot, and both of them killed a police officer. Mm-hmm. In the one case in Burleson County, no bill by the grand jury. And the other one, the guy's on trial for capital murder. So that tells you, that gives you, and that was from, that, I mean,
I let me make a comment about that, because I think about, I fear that, because it's such a, I don't even know what the word I'm trying to say. If that happened to me, based on my training and experience, I don't pull that trigger till I identify. However, I question the guy wearing the badge. If he's busting into my house thinking I'm the bad guy, and here we meet in the hallway, and he sees me with a gun, guess who's going to get waxed? Me. So this is a very precarious situation. Hopefully, put the proper address on your homes, put a light on it, and say, I'm not the bad guy. He lives down the street. All right, let's finish this up here, Ross. Please explain or reiterate the importance of being prepared with this knowledge and how not being prepared can be fatal for you both physically and legally.
Well, not being prepared, let's say that you don't know how to use your weapon and you don't know how to unlock it, or you don't know, really, you haven't practiced with it, so you're not comfortable with it. So you think somebody's breaking into your home, and you go and you're trying to get your weapon straight because you're not comfortable using it, and you go downstairs and you just start firing off because you're in such a rush from just trying to get your weapon up, right, that you're not thinking about what it is. And what if it's your...
And you're absolutely right.
What if it's your cousin?
But I was speaking of actually not knowing these laws. How important it is that these people need to study these laws and understand them and get the concept ideas of both how it's instructed and about how you're coming across on it. How important that it's a lack of knowledge. What can it do to them in a courtroom?
But that's why it's important to know how to use your weapon, because you, if you know how to use it, you're going to grab your weapon, be comfortable, and then you can think about, okay, what can I do legally? Instead of being under pressure, right, and in a pressure situation and just running down there and not being what a jury would find as ordinary and reasonable person, mm-hmm. right, and just start firing off.
Now, everybody, that's awesome. Ross just showed his expertise. He took something I said, cloverleafed it back in, and made it all work. That's awesome. You did a great job. You need to be on, you need to have a radio show. Okay, we're going to finish it up here in the next 45 seconds. Ross, anything else you can add that I may have missed when it comes to the use of force, reasonable and necessary force, deadly force, so on and so forth in 45 seconds? I know that's hard for an attorney, I know.
Lex, the I think we covered our bases here. I mean, you're going to be asking me to go into a bunch of cases, but... I will say this. You don't have to retreat, and you can use deadly force if you're in a place where you have a right to be. You have not provoked the other person, okay, and you're not otherwise committing a crime.
Right?
The law is going to be on your side. If you don't meet one of those three exceptions, you know, one of those three requirements, if you're doing something wrong or you're talking smack to the other person, right, or you're in a place where maybe you don't have a right to be, okay, then...
You need to call Ross... Benton Ross Watson.
You probably need to get your pocketbook ready, okay? And the last thing is if it's criminal trespass, right, you got to make sure when you use deadly force, right, that it is necessary to use that force. And I agree with that point to say it's reasonable and necessary. If somebody's just trespassing on your property, like even an insurance man to come say, you can't just start firing off.
Yeah, just start.
It's going to have to be.
You would think that's common sense, but common sense isn't too common anymore, you know?
Right. It's good,
like that. All right, Ross, tell everybody how they can get a hold of you real quick.
105 East Main here in Cameron. My office number is 254-605-4140. I appreciate the show. I have to answer these questions almost all the time, so if you got a question, you can just call me and we can talk about it.
I'm keeping you on the razor's edge, man. I'm keeping you sharp, right?
Yeah.
All right, Ross, thanks.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Trey, let's take a 3-minute break. When we come back, I'm going to fill it in with some what the F's today. So we'll be back on the other side.
Capolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron prides themselves on service, resourcefulness, knowledge of the law, and attention to detail. So if you or a loved one has been injured by someone else's negligence, they can help. Call 888-637-6347 for help today from Capolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm. Capolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm will work as hard for your family as you do. Call 800-460-0606 for Capolino Dodd Krebs.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who's been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Petros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. aaronsgunshop.com.
Arch Coons, the owner of ANC Firearms in Heidenhammer, Texas, is an avid gun enthusiast and enjoys helping all of his customers to find the gun that's perfect for them. With a large selection of pistols, rifles, and shotguns, finding the right gun becomes easy. Go to ANC Firearms, located at 5819 U.S. Highway 190 in Heidenhammer, or call them 254-983-4417. Pistols, rifles, shotguns, ammo, knives, and a whole lot more. ANC Firearms, 254-983-4417.
Hey Siri, I just got engaged.
That is very exciting, Cassie. What would you like for me to do next?
Oh gosh, there's so much. I've got to find a dress, flowers, cake, food, a photographer, a venue, bridesmaids I have to call, and...
Here is what I have found. Everything you are looking for is in one place. The Hilton Garden Inn Temple is presenting their 13th annual bridal show on Sunday, March 26th from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. You'll meet with wedding vendors from photography, bakeries, salons, venues, florists, and lots of others who are ready to help you plan your special day.
Siri, you are the best.
Actually, there's more. Every vendor will be giving away a door prize valued at $50, and the Hilton Garden Inn will be giving away a grand prize of a newlywed date night package for a year.
Sunday, March 26th at the Hilton Garden Inn in Temple from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. For more information, call 254-899-3908.
If you're planning a party for a wedding, birthday, anniversary, corporate event, or just to have fun, and you plan to serve alcohol, you need a bartender. Aaron's High Cap Nightcaps Bartending Service is who you need to call. Aaron's High Cap Nightcaps provides a complete portable bartending service. When you provide adult beverages to your guests, you want them served fast, correctly, and with flair. Aaron's High Cap Nightcaps can do that for you. TABC certified, professional, and with a complete bar setup, Aaron's can help make your social event one to remember for a long time. Call Aaron's now at 254-482-0557 or email Aaron's at mail@aaronsnightcaps.com. Make Aaron's High Cap Nightcaps your first call and last call when you want a professional bartender for your next social or corporate event. Call 254-482-0557 or go to aaronsnightcaps.com.
And that's powerful stuff.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program, March 25th, 2017. We're continuing on here. We're going to finish up the first hour with a few what the Fs. I've had these for a little while, and I just read them, and it's kind of one of those things where you go, what the... And you can figure out what the F word is. But let me read this one here. I read this article. Man, this was from March 3rd. Man walking on I-35 struck and killed. I'm going to read to you and tell you what kind of... WTF'd me. Temple man was identified Thursday as a pedestrian who died sometime before 8:49 p.m. Wednesday when he was struck and killed while walking on Interstate 35. Well, that's your first mistake, okay? But that's not what the WTF's about. The gentleman, 35, was walking in the middle of the fast lane on northbound I-35 traffic in the area adjacent to the Pizza Hut on the old Johnson Brother Ford building. Police don't know why the man was walking on I-35, but here's the part. A mid-size Acura SUV first hit the man, but several other vehicles also hit him. some of the drivers didn't stop. There's the WTF. What the F, man? I've read a few stories like that where people just go, they're driving, boom, boom. They just keep going on. Whatever happened to common decency to stop and make a report and see what the heck you hit? All right, that's the first one. Here's another one. This one reminds me of my mother. This is from March 7th. The importance of a thank you. No note means no future gifts. This is Dear Annie. Dear Annie, I have actually found comfort in reading the letters from grandparents and others who have shared their dismay in never receiving thank you notes. At least I'm not the only one who has had this problem. I tried talking to the kids and the parents to no avail. The parents even tried to explain, that the kids have too busy, too many activities, so on and so forth. I was appalled, so I went on plan B. During one visit, when everyone is at the dining room table, I passed out thank you cards to all the grandkids. The envelopes were pre-addressed to my husband and me and stamped. I also gave them an additional box of thank you notes to be used for other gift givers. I share the importance of sending thank you notes whenever they receive a gift. I then advised that they were all on permanent probation. No thank you means no future gifts. End of story. I give them 5 days after receipt of the gift to send the note. That has worked. Of course, their mother thinks I'm a nag and old-fashioned. I think I'm teaching my grandkids important life lessons, and shame on their parents for not doing the same. But now I enjoy notes from my grandkids, and some of them are even being more thoughtful and giving other ways. What's the WTF in this? You don't write a thank you for a gift that's given to you? And don't even give me this crap about emails. Sit down with a piece of paper and a pen, take the time and let the person know that you appreciated the thought, and send them a freaking thank you. A stamp costs how much now? I don't even know. Get a forever stamp. This way I don't have to lose track of how much they cost. Just put on your forever stamp and send the darn thing out within 5 days and a story. All right, I got time for one more. This is from the 13th. More great white sharks appear to be visiting off Cape Cod shore. Oh boy. Great white sharks are discovering what tourists have known for years. Cape Cod is a great place to spend the summer. Blah, blah, blah. But that's no reason to cancel vacation. The sharks are after seals, not humans. Oh, give me a freaking break. You're going to go. I've got a picture here, and you can see the shark right off the coast, maybe about 50 meters. You're going to go swimming in there because, and you're going to feel safe because they said all they eat are seals? Hello? Can you say Jaws? Okay. What the F? Anyway, I'm not going to go in the ocean and become part of the food chain. You can do it. And if we're going to go, you can be with me and I can use you as bait. But anyway, there you go. 11 o'clock, Trey. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back after this 1 minute break, we will have the voice of law enforcement, Officer Randy Dixon.
If you're planning a party for a wedding, birthday, anniversary, corporate event, or just to have fun, and you plan to serve alcohol, you need a bartender. Aaron's High Cap Nightcaps Bartending Service is who you need to call. Aaron's High Cap Nightcaps provides a complete portable bartending service. When you provide adult beverages to your guests, you want them served fast, correctly, and with flair. Aaron's High Cap Nightcaps can do that for you. TABC certified, professional, and with a complete bar setup, Aaron's can help make your social event one to remember for a long time. Call Aaron's now at 254-482-0557 or email Aaron's at mail@aaronsnightcaps.com. Make Aaron's High Cap Nightcaps your first call and last call when you want a professional bartender for your next social or corporate event. Call 254-482-0557 or go to aaronsnightcaps.com.
And that's powerful stuff.
Good morning, Cameron and Milam County. Hope y'all are doing great on this Saturday morning. Those WTFs were quite unusual. You know, if I see a shark, I probably would find a dyslexic shark that wouldn't know the difference between me and a seal, or either a walrus, one of the two. But today, hope everybody's doing great. Hope everybody's had a wonderful Saturday morning. It's wonderful outside. It's cool, crisp. A great day to get out and enjoy the weather. Go shoot a little bit. take your guns out, enjoy your family, enjoy some time together. Today, we're going to look at some things that are a little bit different. You know, you just got through hearing, our wonderful host and his guests talk about how to protect yourself in your home, whether you could have the right to have a gun at home and shoot and protect yourself. You know, everybody knows that it's Texas. Somebody breaks into your house, you're going to do what's necessary to protect yourself. We're going to do it a little bit different today, though. We're going to talk about alarm systems. You know, I'm a firm, strong believer of anything electronic. I've had a long career, about 43 years of law enforcement, that where questions have been asked and raised of whether a house or a business is safer when an alarm system has been installed, or it's safer when a security system is installed in a residence. Well, folks, the answer to that is just a resounding yes, it is. There are a number of mixed reviews, of course. I mean, depends on who you talk to. Many times, skepticism has overshadowed good sense and common sense in a lot of these thoughts and ideas. You know, what is the most valuable thing or items that you have in your house? Is it your precious firearm that we all, and your priceless firearms that we all hold true to? Is it a coin collection that was passed down from your mom, your dad, or from your grandparents? For instance, I've got two little inanimate objects that probably, if you had to sell them, or if somebody wanted to buy them, it wouldn't cost a dollar a piece. But they were from the late 1800s that were toys that my great-grandparents had, passed to my grandparents, passed to my dad, passed to me, and someday I'll be passing it to my children. You know, things like that are things we can't replace. They're priceless. They're irreplaceable. So how do we protect them? Well, every person has a way that they want their own property protected. Every person has something they consider priceless to them. But no matter how materialistic we become and cherish those items that we have the greatest dollar value for, you got to remember, folks, the most important item, or it should be your most important item, is your safety, your family's safety, and your life. Nothing is more important than that. Not even, you know, it's like the old saying, you can take the richest man in the world. When they put him in the ground, where's he going to have the money? Because it's sure not going to be there with him. You know, nothing compares to the feeling of safety within your own house, folks. Over the years, as many of you have done, I've collected items that I would truly hate to lose to someone else. Do they cost a lot of money? Nah, no, certainly not. In the true sense of the word, they probably aren't worth a plugged nickel to anyone else but me. And what I hope to pass down to my sons is the fact that sometimes you look at things that cost money and they're not as important as the things that don't cost money. Therefore, you know, one of the things that I believe in is I want to provide the greatest security that I could provide to my house and to my family. True, I'm armed. I've got guns. I've got trained to use guns. I've lived around guns all my life. And it's something that I use to hold and protect with. But there are times when we're not going to be home and we want our items protected as well. I wish I could tell you that your police department alone could protect your valuables, your property, and your life. But common sense tells you that the police can only be at one place at one time, and there isn't enough police officers to go around in this country at all. If we had the funds to put a police officer on every corner, in each and every town, in each and every community, there would still be those elements of society which would try to penetrate your residence, try to perform criminal acts upon you and others in the area. Those of us here in the Central Texas area are much more fortunate than many communities, and we know that. You know, I'm not going to list the communities that you know that are dangerous, but if you read the newspapers, you hear about the things where something happens every single day. You know, and when you do that, it brings us to reality what happens to us. The property crime rate in Milam County, for instance, is moderate compared to others. It's rather low. The original question posted by this article, though, asked if alarm systems and camera systems reduce the likelihood of being a victim, and the answer is absolutely yes. However, the problem exists that people believe they cannot afford such. In the old days, that might have been true. That might have been the case. Alarms used to be very expensive. Today, with the competition between alarm companies and the innovative products that are on the market, anyone can afford. I mean anyone can afford an alarm in their home or business today. There are many companies that flood the market advertising alarms and such, and most of the companies are top-notch, folks. Never purchase, though, an alarm system from anyone that doesn't have the Texas Department of Public Safety license to sell and install those alarms. No fly-by-night companies. There are some fly-by-night companies that come in and will try to sell you and to see you and to make sure you use a reputable product, But then once they make that sale, where are they? They're gone. Obviously, I can and won't recommend any company over the others. If you want to know that, all you got to do is give me a call here at the radio station. Send me an email, randydixon76502@gmail.com, and I'll be happy to give you some ideas on which companies I believe provide the best service to you. If you opt to install an alarm system yourself, there are a couple of things you need to make sure of. First, make sure they're bonded, the company that you use is bonded, and have all the appropriate license documentation in place. Second, make sure that they have a company that, or you have a company, buy from a company that is close enough to respond to your needs in case of equipment failure. Every alarm system is going to have bugs. Every alarm system. Many of the national companies who advertise on TV and such have no local representative to handle complaints. And that's a problem, folks. That should be a red flag as to whether to go with them or go with someone else. Buy local. And by local, obviously, I don't think there's anybody here in Temple that install, or correction, anybody here in Cameron that installs alarms, but there's a number of good companies in Temple, Bryan, Austin, Georgetown that do install alarm systems. As many people believe that they cannot get an alarm system if they rent and do not own the location where they reside, that's also true. If you're renting a house, you can have an alarm just like anyone else can. Every single alarm company now sells a wireless system that can be installed and removed each and every time a person relocates to a new house or apartment. This makes security available to literally everyone, folks. In addition, the majority, and this is really important, the majority of every insurance company provides a substantial discount on your homeowner's policy for having a monitored security system in your home. Your savings from the homeowner's policy alone will pay for the alarm system in most cases. That is a win-win situation for you for sure. Besides alarm systems, and this is what many people are going to now, and I highly, based on my past experience, I highly recommend this, folks, security cameras. They're up and coming. You know, you can put a doorbell on your door, that when they ring the doorbell, it activates a camera where you can watch from wherever you're at. Things like this are the innovations that have been coming and growing. Avail yourself of this. It used to be, and you know, let's be honest, it used to be that only the wealthy could afford security cameras and security systems. This is far from the truth today. From local discount clubs such as Sam's, Costco, or anything like that, stores to professional alarm companies to catalog companies, cameras can be purchased and installed at your residence or business for a very nominal fee compared to years ago. Security cameras are extremely good in protecting your property and yourself. The majority of all security camera systems now are attached to a DVR, which allows a homeowner or a business owner to keep a record, to keep a backlog of anyone that has come around your house. Should a crime take place or you have unwanted visitors, there's a permanent record there of who those people are. It helps the local law enforcement to be able to identify, to have for court or whatever it may be. You know, so think about these things. Back years ago, it cost you $1,000 to $2,000 to put a camera system in your home. Not anymore. You can go to Walmart. You can go to Sam's Club. You can buy a four-camera DVR system that anybody can install for under $300, $350. You know, if I can install a camera, anybody can. Trust me. And with the good thing about that, if you have a smartphone such as an iPhone or a Droid, or such, you can actually set an app up on your phone where you can watch your house while you're away. You can see what goes on. Back in years ago, they used to have the nanny cams where you could watch your home from while your kids were being kept. It's now to the point now where it's not only a nanny cam, it's a protection cam, something that's where you could actually see. But if you don't feel confident, if you don't feel like you can install the camera system yourself, there are plenty of companies in the area. And once again, email me or call the radio station, and I'll be happy to give you that information on who I would recommend. There are a few more ideas about security alarm and cameras that you might want to consider, though. Home security systems cannot guarantee the safety of your home. They won't. They won't totally guarantee it. No practical method exists that can provide complete security except yourself and your own knowledge. However, home security systems are an effective deterrent to crime. And if all the necessary components are in place, they greatly increase the security of your home. Even sensor lights that come on when someone comes around. Things like that. Anything you can do to harden your home, to make it where the potential criminal comes around, will increase the possibility of your home being safer. A burglar knows that many systems not only have many homes not only have alarms that will alert the neighbors and their occupants of the problems, but they also send messages to monitoring centers. I highly recommend you think about that. If you're going to put an alarm system in, have one that's monitored by a local company. It only costs pennies a day to do that. It's also safer for you. You know, where do you put alarms at? Of course, there are different levels of home security, obviously, depending on how much money you're willing to spend. Usually, doorways, windows, and other entrances are monitored when the alarm is set off. Motion detectors in the house or vibration detectors all help the alarm system become a better system itself. A good detector can discriminate between pets or animals. True, I know I've had people tell me in the past, well, I've got animals in the house and they'll set the alarm off. Well, folks, a good alarm company, one that that knows what they're doing, they have discriminatory type sensors that can tell the difference in poundage and the motion size and things of that nature. There are also some advanced types of sensors that detect when intruders enter a certain space, even when they're not trying to break into a door or window. These sensors may use laser perimeters, heat detectors, sound detectors, and other types of technology to sense when someone has entered into a secured area of your house. Remember, whatever you have to protect, judge your security system by what you're trying to protect. But I will tell you this, there is absolutely nothing, folks, nothing as important as your home, your security, and your livelihood, your family. If I had $10 billion, that would not be worth the lives of one of my children or one of my family members, my grandchildren, or something of that nature. You know, there's also some home security systems, and this is the one in particular security system that I have in my house. This is what I have. Some home security systems also include TV monitors that allow you to see what is going on outside of your house while you're inside the house. And folks, let me tell you a secondary thing that that's good for. If you got somebody that comes to your front door and you really don't want to be bothered with those persons, maybe it's your mother-in-law, maybe it's your father-in-law, or your cousins, you can see who's at the door and you don't have to answer it. But on the other hand, if you got some bad guys that are trooping around your house and some people that are snooping around your house, you can also see that as well. There are advanced alarm systems. Like I said, every type of alarm system under the sun is available, folks, depending on the technology that's there, if you're willing to spend for it. Advanced home security systems may even have devices that inflict pain or confusion upon the intruder. And what I mean that is simply from sound. They don't shoot out bombs. They don't shoot out flares at them. But it makes such a loud sound and such a high intensity of a light that it confuses or dazes the would-be intruder. You know, home security is not a hard thing to do. It's just something that we don't take the time to do. We'll take the time to water our yards, put flowers up. We take the time to make sure that our lawn is cut so that the neighbors think we have the Class A lawn or the Master Gardener lawn of the week. But we don't take the time to leave our lights on. We don't take the time to put our security systems in. Folks, security is not free. Livelihood, safety is not free. Just like you have to do when you're out shooting, you got to practice it. You got to practice your use of your weapon. You got to practice the use of your firearms. But you also have to practice the use of safety as well. You know, obviously, though, you should only depend on home security systems that can't be defeated easily by the criminals. Don't think about these things like some people do and put fake cameras up. Even criminals have enough common sense that they know whether a system is good or it's not good. Closing today, there's a couple things, folks. And please go back and remember what I said at the very first of this program today. Your home security is a matter of how much you want to put into it. Your safety is as much as you want to put into it. You know, I'll go over it and I'll say it again and I'll say it again. Security systems do prevent crime when all necessary components are in place. and the system is adequate for the job. That's depending on your individual circumstances. Rottweilers will prevent crimes, but it also causes problems for your neighbors sometimes. Think about what you're doing. Think about where you're going to put your security system in. There's also a number of police departments in the area, sheriff's departments in the area. Take a few minutes to call them, ask them where they think you should put the security system, the lighting systems. If they're any kind of agency at all that's worth their salt, they'll be more than happy to help you and give you advice on that. Once again, if anyone has any questions about security, please give me a call. I can tell you the name of several companies that are local that can help you, that can give you advice. I can help you, give you advice, and tell you where you need your highest security for your home and what you're trying to protect. An absolutely free service. Don't charge a penny for that. Once again, if you have anything that you would like to send me to answer for you, all you have to do is send me an email, randydixon76502@gmail.com, and that's all one word spelled together. And my last name is Dixon, not like the one from the Alamo. So if you have any questions, folks, remember, always report a crime, report suspicious activity to your local law enforcement agency, wherever you're at. And, our ultimate goal here, the ultimate goal of anybody who has dedicated their life to law enforcement is your protection. You know, politics aside, we're all in this game together called life. Protect yourselves, help yourselves, but you got to also help people that will be willing to help you as well. So until next week, next Saturday, be happy to see all of y'all, hear from y'all. Have a wonderful week, everybody, and enjoy the time out this weekend. It's almost downtime to the Final Four of basketball, which means baseball season's right around the corner. So enjoy the time outside. Have a great week, everybody, and God bless you.
Capilino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron focuses on cases involving personal injury litigation, including asbestos exposure and mesothelioma. At Capilino Dodd Krebs Law Firm, you are never treated like a number. Cases are accepted on a contingency basis, so clients do not have to pay out of their pocket. Contact Capilino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron today. Call 888-MISO-FIRM.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who's been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Petros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. AaronsGunshop.com.
Arch Coons, the owner of ANC Firearms in Heidenhammer, Texas, is an avid gun enthusiast and enjoys helping all of his customers to find the gun that's perfect for them. With a large selection of pistols, rifles, and shotguns, finding the right gun becomes easy. Go to ANC Firearms, located at 5819 U.S. Highway 190 in Heidenhammer, or call them 254-983-4417. Pistols, rifles, shotguns, ammo, knives, and a whole lot more. ANC Firearms, 254-983-4417.
Hey, Siri, I just got engaged.
That is very exciting, Cassie. What would you like for me to do next?
Oh, gosh, there's so much. I've got to find a dress, flowers, cake, food, a photographer, a venue, bridesmaids I have to call, and...
Here is what I have found. Everything you are looking for is in one place. The Hilton Garden Inn Temple is presenting their 13th annual bridal show on Sunday, March 26th from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. You'll meet with wedding vendors from photography, bakeries, salons, venues, florists, and lots of others who are ready to help you plan your special day.
Siri, you are the best.
Actually, there's more. Every vendor will be giving away a door prize valued at $50, and the Hilton Garden Inn will be giving away a grand prize of a newlywed date night package for a year.
Sunday, March 26th at the Hilton Garden Inn in Temple from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. For more information, call 254-899-3908.
If you're planning a party for a wedding, birthday, anniversary, corporate event, or just to have fun, and you plan to serve alcohol, you need a bartender. Aaron's High Cap Nightcaps Bartending Service is who you need to call. Aaron's High Cap Nightcaps provides a complete portable bartending service. When you provide adult beverages to your guests, you want them served fast, correctly, and with flair. Aaron's High Cap Nightcaps can do that for you. TABC certified, professional, and with a complete bar setup, Aaron's can help make your social event one to remember for a long time. Call Aaron's now at 254-482-0557 or email Aaron's at mail@aaronsnightcaps.com. Make Aaron's High Cap Nightcaps your first call and last call when you want a professional bartender for your next social or corporate event. Call 254-482-0557 or go to aaronsnightcaps.com.
And that's powerful stuff.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. Today is March 25th, 2017, and we're still here alive. We got a lot going on here. Now, I'm going to have a clip of this video put onto Facebook, YouTube, whatever. You're going to see the wonderful work that Susan Connolly did, and you probably can't tell the difference now that you're looking at this video. You can't tell, is it live or is it paint? And you'll know what I mean once the video gets up, but let's be serious for a second here. I want to go over all the things that are happening here coming up tomorrow and the rest or part of April. Lots of exciting things are going on in Aaron's this month and in April. And the first and foremost is tomorrow. You've been hearing about the bridal show at the Temple Hilton Garden Inn. I'm going to be there from 1 to 4 with a full bar setup. I'm going to be doing the bridal show. And if you're getting married soon, you need to be there to see all the vendors who can help make your wedding an even better success than you can imagine. So if you're going to serve alcohol, then you really need to see me about that. I've got a beautiful setup in the Hilton Garden Inn in Temple tomorrow from 1 to 4 p.m. You can check it out. Okay, lots of other vendors. Come say hi, say you listen to the show, so on and so forth. And we can tell you what we can do for you at your wedding or even a corporate party, birthday party, or just getting the friends together and having a good time. Now, on April 1st, and this is no joke, okay, no April Fool's joke, I will be having another license to carry class. That will be Saturday from 2 to 7:30 p.m. It's $60 for new persons and $40 for a refresher course. And trust me, everyone, if you've got a license to carry or a CHL, same thing, you all could use a refresher course. I can use a refresher course. Every time I do a class, I'm getting a refresher course. So it's only $40 if you already got your license, and it's well worth the $40. On April 15th, I have set up a co-ed self-defense with a handgun and a home defense seminar. I don't set these up but a few times a year, so if you want an action-packed seminar that is full of information and shooting, you need to sign up now. Just go to aaronsgunshop.com and go to the High Cap Adventure page to sign up. Also, check out the testimonial page of some of those who have done it already. You will not be disappointed, and you for sure will feel empowered after the class. Remember, too, if you have a group of five or more, I can set up a special class for you. So just let me know. Give me an email at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com. Go directly to the website. But don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, if you like this program, I need your support. It doesn't stay on the air by itself. So either like me on Facebook, call into the show, become a sponsor with one of your great products, donate some money, do whatever you show up, call up, be part of the show, show that you're listening out there and make it a lot of fun for everybody. Give me some ideas if there's things that we should go over and we can make the show better and better. Now, I want to go over our product spotlight. The product spotlight today is the Ruger Tactical Mini 14, and it's available from our sponsor, ANC Firearms and Heidenhammer. If you go to my Facebook page again, aaronsgunshop.com, go to the Facebook page and scroll down a little bit, you'll see the picture of me holding the Mini 14, It's a pretty sexy little beast. You want to check it out. And I've had one for years. It's, gosh, I remember when the 762 by 39 one came out. I think it was in 88 it came out. It was either 87 or 88 when it came out. But I had my 223 version. Now I got both, and it's just depending on what the situation is, determines which one I use. Great gun. I love them. They're like battle tanks. They work all the time. So I'm going to read to you an article, and like I tell you all the time, I get different people's opinions to see, one, what they say, and two, see if they come up with the same conclusions as I do when it comes to looking at weapons. I also want to make note, Susan Connolly is in here. You can make contact with Susan at SusanStirlblog.com and check out what she has to offer. She's doing a portrait of me in the studio as we're talking. We're going to get her on probably within 10 minutes or so. Talk to her, and part of the video that I was telling you about before, the portrait, is what she painted of me. It's incredible. Awesome, and she can teach you to do the same thing. So we'll have her on here in a little bit. But back to the sponsor, the Tactical Ruger Mini 14. This is from Mike Boyle from TacticalLife.com. Introduced in 1974, the Ruger Mini 14 has become one of the most popular self-loading rifles of all time. The casual observer will note a strong resemblance between the Mini 14 and the older M14 service rifle, and this is hardly a coincidence. In coming up with the Mini 14, designers L. James Sullivan and William B. Ruger borrowed heavily from the M14 blueprint, but incorporated numerous innovations and cost-saving engine changes of their own. The original M14 was chambered for the popular, Mini 14 was chambered for the popular 223 round, and this handy rifle became an instant hit with law enforcement. Most recently, the Ruger Mini 14 platform is changed for the 7.62 by 39 and 6.8 cartridges. A version with full auto capability, the AC556, has also been manufactured. I've owned a few minis and have had considerable experience with several more on my job. This is the author speaking. For the most part, Mini 14s have been reliable performers and have continued to work with just a minimum of upkeep. One quality that often came up short, however, was accuracy. Compared to the AR-15 and other military sporters, the Mini 14 lagged far behind and accuracy potential was less than stellar. But around 2003, Ruger began to revamp production of the Mini 14 in a very significant way. The gas system was modified, new sights were offered, and the new minis were built to much tighter tolerances. At this time, Ruger also noted that many police departments were exploring the concept of a patrol rifle and felt their upgraded rifle could fit that niche. Ruger Mini 14s optimized for the patrol mission are now available. Perhaps the best news of all is that these rifles are equipped with a recontoured flange barrel that is heavier than the original in effort to achieve better accuracy. Recently, I was able to obtain a Ruger Mini 14 Tactical for test and evaluation. The Tactical version features a full-length rail in place of the polymer handguard to facilitate the mounting of an optically enhanced sight system. The Mini 14 is gas-operated, box-fed, auto-loading rifle that combines the best features of the Garand M14 with modern technology. Its operating mechanism uses Ruger's proprietary fixed piston-moving cylinder gas system in conjunction with a simplified Garand-type rotating bolt. Field stripping to the basic sub-assemblies is accomplished without the use of tools, which is very nice. Pop the trigger guard, pull it out, and you're good to go. So what makes the new Tactical special? Well, most obvious is the use of a synthetic rather than the walnut finish, American hardwood stock to the original. Action and barrel are made of my sample were rendered to stainless instead of carbon steel. Standard iron sights consist of a ghost ring aperture made into a blade front. The rear sight is adjustable for both windage and elevation. A set of protective wings keeps the front sight safe from hard knocks. And like all new generation ranch-style Mini 14s, the Tactical version has recesses in the top of the receiver for the attaching of scope rings to mount a telescopic sight. Barrel contour is indeed beefier than the original Mini 14. The 16.12-inch barrel features a 1-in-9 right-handed twist, which stabilizes most 223 loads quite well. The barrel of the Tactical also sports a flash hider, a big plus when firing in low-light environments. Operation of the Mini 14 is very straightforward, and its manual of arms is a study in simplicity. To load up, first place the weapon on safe and point it in a safe direction. Next, retract the bolt to the rear and lock it open by depressing the bolt lock plunger. insert a loaded magazine, run the bolt forward to chamber around, and you're good to go. Pushing the safety forward and pressing the trigger will fire the gun. And to unload, simply reverse the process. Once again, point the rifle in a safe direction. Make sure it's on safe. Depress the magazine latch. Remove the magazine from the rifle. Run the bolt to the rear to clear the chamber. And finally, depress the bolt, lock down plunger to lock the action open, and visually and physically inspect to verify an empty chamber. In summary, ladies and gentlemen, I've dissected this article just to streamline it. But in summary, there really wasn't anything I could take issue with while putting the Mini 14 Tactical through the paces. It proved to both be accurate and reliable, and that's all I can ask for. Once again, because I cut it short, the older versions, like the one I had, some were hit and miss with accuracy. And then the revamp of the gas system and the heavier barrel, I don't hear any complaints anymore. And as he has stated here, the accuracy is very good. His final thoughts. If you haven't tried out a Mini 14 lately, you owe it to yourself to check out the new generation of this self-loader. My past grievances was that the Minis weren't nearly as accurate as competitive designs. That apparently has been resolved. Today, many agencies are considering the concept of a patrol rifle as either a supplement or a replacement to the shotgun. And from what I have seen, the Mini 14 Tactical could certainly fill that role. Other models optimized for law enforcement are also available from Ruger. It looks like this reborn Mini 14 is ready to get up and run with the big dogs. This upgraded package should make the Mini 14 a viable contender for law enforcement applications in the years to come, as well as civilian use. Now, ladies and gentlemen, ANC Firearms, one of our sponsors here on the program out in Heidenhammer, has this gem sitting on the shelf right now. The number is 254-983-4417. You need to give them a call. You need to go there and drive by and check it out. They've got guns, ammo, knives, reloading equipment, holsters, gun bags, lasers, optics, red dots, the whole works. Great crew. Arch Kuntz, the owner. You got Clint, Dennis, Mike, and the rest of the gang there all ready to help and serve you and to help you pick the right gun. And you will not be disappointed. So go to check out ANC Firearms in Heidenhammer, 254-983-4417. Okay. Now, there's a few different ways we can go here because I got a little dead spot, but I'm going to check with Susan. Susan, you're painting my portrait. I know it's been a challenge to paint this face here. Are you pretty much done where we can get you on now?
I think so.
All right, then why don't you scoot on over here? We'll get a chair for you. And we'll get you on the air, and we're going to see who you are and what you're all about and talk about a bunch of different things here. So as she comes to the microphone, ladies and gentlemen, I'm looking at my portrait, and my gosh, I did not realize I look like that. She actually made me look somewhat decent. Susan, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Is her mic working, Trey?
Yes.
Okay, very good. Susan, welcome to the show. It's been a pleasure to see you working here. It's a pleasure to know you. We've known each other for quite a while. And tell me about last night, though. You were on a team, and you did what last night?
So last night we did a round robin. It was a contest, and
the law enforcement benefit shoot, right?
Law enforcement benefit shoot.
That's a
and the winner
mouthful.
Gives all the money to the law enforcement city of their choice.
Choice. That's right.
Okay.
Would you not agree that the money wasn't really the thing? They want that freaking trophy to show off that hey. We
oh, that was
right.
A beautiful trophy. It has an eagle, American flag.
It's pretty nice.
It's really nice.
And hopefully soon it'll be posted up on Facebook. You can go check it out there. But Susan, first, I've known you. Know, it's been so long. I can't remember when we first made contact. I think you just came to the shop one time.
I took a CHL class from you about 8 years ago now, I believe.
Okay.
So I've had my carry license for roughly 7 or 8 years.
And let me tell you something, ladies and gentlemen. Don't mess with Susan. She's a pretty darn good shot, and she can handle herself under stress. That was one of the neat things about the competition that I set up there, and the way I did it was to stop shooting at a piece of paper and get your stress levels up. You're shooting at a piece of paper, but instead of just standing there shooting, you're competing against somebody else. You're under time constraints with accuracy using different people's guns.
That's right.
And if you can handle that, it's pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty stressful. It's a good... very good, you know, tool to use to get better under stress and pressure. And if the gun jams, you unjam it or you move on to the next gun. You only have 60 seconds to do six guns, 10 seconds a gun.
That's right. That's right. So. And did you not notice? I noticed this a couple of times. Some people with malfunctions, they're like, what I do? And the brain has to start thinking, and then you utilize what you learn to accomplish it, right?
That's right.
If you don't practice, would you not say that doing that under stress would be kind of difficult?
Yes, it's difficult. You do have to practice to get good at that.
I remember when I saw you the first time, when you first did the round robin, you're like, oh, I got a malfunction here, what do I do? And now, man, you are slick as snot on a doorknob. It's unbelievable.
Well, I want to win.
We got a competitor here, ladies and gentlemen. Susan, before we screw up, tell everybody how they can get in touch with you when it comes to the painting aspect. And tell us a little bit about your painting to make sure we don't...
I have been painting since fifth grade. I started painting again very seriously last year. I have a blog. You can go to look at my paintings. It's SusanStirlblog.com. I'll spell that for you. It's SusanStirlblog.com. And I'm going to post all my paintings on that, and you can go and check it out. You can email me at sconnolly6@gmail.com. I teach painting classes in my home, in my dining room, on Mondays and Thursday nights from 6 to 8, 8:30. Sometimes we go long. We're having a good time, so we just hang out and paint. So
that sounds like fun. Do you do finger painting too?
Well, we can accommodate finger painting. Okay. If that's what you'd like to do, we could do that.
Like to get messy, you know. Okay. How did you get started in painting? I know you started when you were five, but what was it? Just somebody told you to do it, or you had this desire?
Oh, my mom was artistic, and I took a painting class in fifth grade, and just kind of just went from there. I remember drawing in second grade. You know, I'd take my drawings to the teacher, and so I've been, you know, doing this for a long time.
And you said your mom was artistic. That sounds very parallel to me, because my dad was very artistic. Many oil paintings, and actually down the shop, the one of Iwo Jima, that's over that one window, my dad painted that.
Yeah.
And he's done many more, and that got me into artwork. My medium, however, was basically pencil and charcoal. What kind of mediums do you do? Do you do it all?
I do pencil, charcoal. I prefer oil and acrylic. Acrylic is a plastic-based paint, and it's water-based, and so it dries a lot faster than oil. I prefer oil. I was in Colorado this last week, and we went outside and painted some acrylic paintings.
What are you using on the portrait?
This is an oil painting.
How long does it usually take to dry?
You probably need to let it dry about a week, and then you can ship it.
Oh, so I can't caress the picture there and say that's...
You can put your fingers on it and do some finger painting if you'd like.
I don't want to do that. Okay. That looks really good. I mean, I'm amazed at how quick you did it. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm moving around. I'm not sitting here still. She's just looking at me and saying, okay, there he is. Boom, got a part of it. She's got my cap down, my beard down, the eyes down, everything. It's just awesome. What's your favorite medium?
My favorite medium is oil, but I like to draw. I also like to really draw with a Pilot pen and just pens in general.
Pilot
and
pen.
Sketch in a sketchbook. Pilot pen is a black marker. It's a very fine tip marker.
Oh, okay.
So it's fun. But I have a lot of students now. They come... I'm very blessed to have people. I've got one set of students that's the grandmother, her daughter, and then her daughter come to paint at my house.
Are there some people who just can't do it? Or is there a way... I'll give you an example. I get people who say they can't shoot. Well, in 30 minutes, I got them shooting. Are there tricks like that when it comes to painting on how you can break?
Yeah, basically when you paint... Basically, it's a fear factor. We all are worried about the final product, and what you got to do is just, you have to enjoy the process. It's like when you were a little kid, when you were two or three, and they put a piece of paper and a pencil down in front of you or crayons, you just went ahead and you drew whatever, and you weren't worried about the final product. You were just enjoying the process, and that's what it's all about, because if you end up worrying about the final process or the final product, if you think you're going to do a Picasso or something like that, it doesn't come out. So what you have to do is, what's happening is you're thinking about yourself, and you have to stop thinking about the final product and think about the process.
Well, the final product is important though, at the end result, right? Because if you're trying to paint a picture of me, I mean, hopefully it'll end up looking like me, right?
But
what would be a trick a concept to say, other than what you're saying, you got to stop worrying about the final product. Is there like practice strokes you can do? Is there?
Well, this is what I teach. I teach, let's say the first thing we'll usually do is a still life, and it'll be all white. And so what we'll do is we'll shine a light on one side, and we will talk about the shapes in that still life. Everything's a shape. It's not a face. It's not an apple. It's not an orange. Everything is a shape. So you have to think of things in that regard rather than it's, you know, Matt Bitros that I'm painting. It's the cap is
like
round.
And the head is square.
Yeah, the head is an oval or whatever. You know, it's all about shapes. It's all about darks and lights and values. And I try to teach that it's just shapes. And then what happens is you forget that it's an object and, you know, you're just looking, you're practicing looking at the shapes, paint, putting the paint on the palette correctly, and then putting that on your canvas correctly.
What about color shades? How do you grasp in your eyes what you see and transform it into your paintbrush? How do you know how much to put in and how much not? Is it just practice?
Yes.
Time on?
Just practice, right?
That's it.
It's just practice. You got to practice doing the round robin in order to get good at it.
So what kind of drills would you do? You say, I want to do a flesh tone, so I'm just going to do little patches of flesh tone until I like what I see?
Well, what we start out with is I try to get my students to cover the whole canvas in shapes first and colors. And then we end up, then you add lights and darks to it. But what you want to do is paint a whole painting all at once and not little pieces at a time so that it all looks like one.
I've noticed a lot of times when people start painting, they do foliage or they do jars or they do fruit. Is that because they're just shapes?
Yeah.
Or is it just because nobody else will sit long enough for them to paint?
Oh, no. It's because it's easy. It's simple shape. You don't want anything too complex because then you get bogged down in the minutiae of the detail. And that's not what we're trying to do. We're just trying to, you know, practice looking at the shapes. And then you have a big shape, then you have smaller shapes within those the big shape, and then that's what creates an apple.
So what you're saying is there's nothing really difficult if you use the concept of painting shapes as compared to saying, I've got to draw a face now, and the eye is recessed from the nose, and the eyebrow is over that.
That's
you
right.
Take each section and turn it into a shape.
Right.
Wow.
What happens
I
then,
learned
though,
that just in 5 minutes with her sitting here. Just think what you can learn. How long is your class?
It's 2 hours. It's from 6 to 8, or sometimes we stay till 9. You know,
she painted a painting in less than 2 hours, and she just taught me how to do an eyeball as not an eye, but a shape of some sort. That's pretty darn good. Keep talking. What else can you tell me? How long?
Okay.
Go ahead.
Let's see.
How large can your class be at one time so you can get individual training?
I have, I think the maximum I've had is 5 people. And 5 to 6 is a pretty good size.
That's interesting because, like, when I'm training, if I don't have other assistants around or anything, I like to keep it to about 5 people so I can give attention to everything. So
that
seems
right.
Like a good solid number there.
Yeah.
I wanted to. We're going to jump back and forth here. We were discussing about a shooting group, about a woman's shooting group, and we're not going to get into major details. I was just thinking, what was your attitude towards that? What do you think about that for women to get involved in a group of some sort to get together?
Well, I think, first of all, let me just point out that I am very passionate about women knowing and not being afraid of guns and shooting guns. If you have a gun in the house, you need to know how to use it, and you need to know how to use it safely. Now, when I got my CHL class, I had a son at home, and I had guns in the house, and I'm a single mom, and I wanted to know, first of all, how to use the gun safely and not, you know, be afraid of it. I had already shot guns and stuff before that, but I wanted to know what the safety rules were and how to use it correctly and so that there's not an accident in the house. But I also wanted to know those things so that I could teach my son mm-hmm. the same tools.
I've seen him shoot. It seems like you taught him pretty well.
Yeah.
So that's pretty good.
He's a good shot.
Now, getting a group of women, you know what I notice when you get a group of women together? Like if we're thinking about a woman's group here, I do my seminars. I've got co-ed seminars and I got ladies only seminars. When I do the co-ed seminars and I have women in there with the guys, they sit there like a bump on a log most of the time.
The women do?
The women, because the guy, he knows it all. He's to some degree saying, no, baby, this is how you do it. And when you do a ladies only class, I become the surrogate man and they listen to me because they don't know me. And when they don't know me, they just let their hair down. Wouldn't you agree that'd be the same way with a woman's club?
Yes.
Shooting?
Yes. And yeah. I agree. Talk.
So if you had somebody.
Yeah, I think a women's group is a great idea in this area. I'm all for, you know, women getting together and learning how to shoot the weapons that they own safely, and not basically not to be afraid of the gun, because it's just a tool. And the more you know about it, the safer you'll be with it, the better off you'll be protecting yourself.
Can I bring up what we're thinking?
Sure.
To a very
Go
brief
ahead.
Degree. We're thinking, ladies and gentlemen, Susan here is a major go-getter. We're thinking about organizing a women's team, club, whatever you want to call it. And I think a lot of women should get together and think about doing this, and we're going to work out the details. And I think it's going to be a fantastic thing for women to get together, utilize the range, get together for camaraderie, learning different skill sets, the whole works, and empower yourself and be prepared for potentially anything that may happen. And this would be great to get together. You let your hair down like we were talking about and have a good time. And Susan is a perfect example of how advancement goes with just opening up and listening and learning and having the desire and drive to want to learn, right?
That's right. Yeah, I'm a major curious person.
And maybe some of that will rub off on others who are a little bit timid, right?
So yeah.
If you have any hesitation, you need to come out of the range and meet this young lady here, and she'll give you some motivation for sure. Okay, let's go back to your painting. Once again, tell everybody how they can make contact with you, and if they're interested in the class, is there any other information you can give about the class, about when you may have some dates set up, what it costs to do it, so on and so forth?
It's pretty flexible. Basically, I do six classes. I try to get you to commit to six classes. It's $150 for six classes. And you can come either on Mondays or Thursdays. So I'm committed to painting and teaching people on those nights from 6 to 8:30. And sometimes I'm out of town. Like last week I was out of town, so we didn't have classes that week. But we're flexible, and I make sure you get your six classes in, you know,
so
on the day.
So, for example, somebody, if wanted to come on a Tuesday and Thursday, you said?
Monday and Thursday.
Somebody wanted to come Monday and then Thursday and then Monday and Thursday. Okay,
yeah,
so you don't have to wait once a week. You
can
do it a lot. Okay, very good. And once again, they can go to SusanSterlblog.com and check out the information. You got artwork there that's on display that they can see. They got a way to contact you and all that kind of stuff.
Well, yeah, and they can email me at sconnolly6@gmail.com. It's sconnolly6@gmail.com. And that's also on the blog, that email.
And I'll make a suggestion, and I don't think you'll have a problem with it. If somebody's interested, a woman's interested in the ladies' group, maybe they can contact you there.
Yep,
and talk
they
about
can
it.
Contact me about that, and also on Matt's Facebook page. If you're interested in joining that group, just to, you know, put your name, we'll message you on Facebook, or, you know, if you're interested, put some contact information there, and we'll get a hold of you.
I think it's great. I think if you ladies get together and organize, ladies always do better than guys when it comes to organizing events. They always do. It's a fact of life. That's the way it happens. You get this group going, and it's going to smoke a lot of other groups out there. And I'll do as much as I can to support the group to make you guys be 100% successful. So hopefully you'll make contact. You can call us here at 254-697-6633. Go to my website, aaronsgunshop.com, or go to the email address, aaronsgunshop@gmail.com, or go to SusanSterlblog.com, or Susan, I'm blind without my glasses. Read the website again, or the
sconnolly6@gmail.com.
And make contact with her there. Susan, any final words? I'm going to have to take a break and then finish up the program. You got any final things you want to do?
I'm passionate about women learning about guns and not being afraid of it. If you're afraid, then you need to practice. You need to learn about your weapon, and you need to come out, take your CHL class, take a day of learning, you know, with Matt, and get after it.
Sounds great. Susan, I can't tell you how much I appreciate the painting that you did. It looks fantastic. Thank you enough for coming on and talking about what you do, and I will sure see you at the range, right?
Yes, you will.
Okay,
Trey. Every Friday.
All right, great. Trey, let's take a 3-minute break. When we come back, we'll finish up the show. See you on the other side.
Cappellino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron focuses on cases involving personal injury litigation, including asbestos exposure and mesothelioma. At Cappellino Dodd Krebs Law Firm, you are never treated like a number. Cases are accepted on a contingency basis, so clients do not have to pay out of their pocket. Contact Capolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron today. Call 888-MISO-FIRM.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who's been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Bitros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. aaronsgunshop.com.
Arch Coons, the owner of ANC Firearms in Heidenhammer, Texas, is an avid gun enthusiast and enjoys helping all of his customers to find the gun that's perfect for them. With a large selection of pistols, rifles, and shotguns, finding the right gun becomes easy. Go to ANC Firearms, located at 5819 U.S. Highway 190 in Heidenhammer, or call them 254-983-4417. Pistols, rifles, shotguns, ammo, knives, and a whole lot more. ANC Firearms, 254-983-4417.
Hey Siri, I just got engaged.
That is very exciting, Cassie. What would you like for me to do next?
Oh gosh, there's so much. I've got to find a dress, flowers, cake, food, a photographer, a venue, bridesmaids I have to call, and...
Here is what I have found. Everything you are looking for is in one place. The Hilton Garden Inn Temple is presenting their 13th annual bridal show on Sunday, March 26th from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. You'll meet with wedding vendors from photography, bakeries, salons, venues, florists, and lots of others who are ready to help you plan your special day.
Siri, you are the best.
Actually, there's more. Every vendor will be giving away a door prize valued at $50, and the Hilton Garden Inn will be giving away a grand prize of a newlywed date night package for a year.
Sunday, March 26th at the Hilton Garden Inn in Temple from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. For more information, call 254-899-3908.
If you're planning a party for a wedding, birthday, anniversary, corporate event, or just to have fun, and you plan to serve alcohol, you need a bartender. Aaron's High Cap Nightcaps Bartending Service is who you need to call. Aaron's High Cap Nightcaps provides a complete portable bartending service. When you provide adult beverages to your guests, you want them served fast, correctly, and with flair. Aaron's High Cap Nightcaps can do that for you. TABC certified, professional, and with a complete bar setup, Aaron's can help make your social event one to remember for a long time. Call Aaron's now at 254-482-0557 or email Aaron's at mail@aaronsnightcaps.com. Make Aaron's High Cap Nightcaps your first call and last call when you want a professional bartender for your next social or corporate event. Call 254-482-0557 or go to aaronsnightcaps.com.
And that's powerful stuff.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. We're finishing up today, March 25th, 2017. Got about 5 minutes. Real quick, as a reminder, April 1st, we have a license to carry class starting at 2 o'clock. The fee for that is $60 for new persons. Refreshers for people who already have their license to carry is $40. Go to aaronsgunshop.com. Check out the license to carry page. You can sign up right there. Give me an email at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com. I'm going to finish up the program with a gun training demo. I think I got enough time to do this. But what we're going to be talking about is pocket size and mini guns here. So almost everyone likes the concept of a small pocket or micro pistol. But let's be sure of our definitions first, though. Pistols are automatics. revolvers, well, they're just revolvers, okay? So I'm going to be talking about pocket and micro pistols, automatic pistols. There are some fantastic pocket and micro pistols out there, and there is junk out there as well. But they have at least two things in common. First thing is they all need the energy, all of it, from the firing of the cartridge to make the gun work. And two, they all need to be held properly to avoid energy from being dissipated due to improper grip. So let's start with the energy. Small guns have small parts and tighter springs. The gun was designed so that when the cartridge is fired, the energy from the spent cartridge will make the slide go back and do what it's supposed to do. The small gun needs every bit of that energy to do its job. A large gun doesn't have that problem as much because the spring is looser and the weight of the slide helps it give momentum when it goes to the rear. The smaller guns don't have that advantage. Now, I know what you're thinking, some of you. Well, I've never had a problem with my smaller micro gun. Yeah, and you also never use that pocket pistol or micro pistol in defense of your life. The dynamics change dramatically if you have not practiced with the gun and prepared yourself. Let me tell you a little thing here about, I had a Kel-Tec pocket PF9, and I was questionable on this particular gun, just for the reason it was a little bit smaller than I was accustomed to. I put it through the course. I challenged it. I had, if you've been a listener to the program, I had a special guest on, John Doe. You can go to my YouTube channel, Aaron's Gun Shop, check out the YouTube video of my special guest, John Doe, and you'll know all about him. Me and him, we're in the range, and we are putting this gun to the test. Round after round after round, different types of shooting positions, different types of scenarios, and actually, we was rolling on the ground, shooting it while rolling on the ground, okay? It worked great. I put it through the test. If you don't do that and don't know the potential problems that a gun may have or know how to hold it, there's going to be a problem. So now, let's talk about the grip when holding the pocket pistol with about 2 minutes left to go here. Plain and simple. If the grip ain't right, you're going to have a malfunction after malfunction. It's almost impossible for me in this short segment to go into detail about the grip, but I can say this. If you have a large hand and a very small gun, you may have made a great recipe for a malfunction. If you have a small hand but are holding the gun with a limp grip, you too may have had a recipe for disaster. Don't carry the gun because you think it's cute. Carry it because you know how to handle it. Stress under fire is not the same as shooting as paper or soda cans. You need to practice. I can teach you. Call me. Sign up for classes. Email me. Do anything you want except carrying a gun for self-defense that you have no freaking idea on how to use.